Good to be together today. Reformation 2018. It's good to be here. 501 years ago, Martin Luther declared his intention to follow Jesus regardless of the consequences. Here I stand. I can do no other. Now, at the end of the sermon, you're going to be invited to approach the baptismal font, to make that approach to the altar. But you'll see there's no bread or wine today. Today you'll have an opportunity to claim your place as a follower of Jesus Christ. Good to be here. I woke up yesterday in Riverside County, California. I had the privilege of officiating at Maya Huff's wedding, and there you see a picture of that. It was a beach wedding. It was 90 degrees. They were all barefoot. I had shoes on. But I figure Reformation weekend is a great weekend for weddings. After all, it has been said, men marry hoping their bride will never change, and women marry with the hope that their groom will change. And you can form your own opinion on that. I'll make no comments. Reformation, reform, reforming, making changes that will improve or make something better. 501 years ago, Martin Luther started the Protestant Reformation, and the Roman Catholic Church was ripe for reformation. The truth is, the church is always in need of reformation. And there are at least three reasons for that. The first is God. God is not done creating. God is not done with you. God is not done with me. God is not done working in the lives of people, and God is not done working on the church. And I'm guessing at some level that we all believe that, or we probably wouldn't be here. God is making all things new, reforming us, and reforming the church that God loves. The church is always in need of reformation because God is not done creating. Secondly, the church is in need of reform because our culture is changing at a rate that we never could have imagined. Technology, social media, and mobility are the primary forces driving the change in our society. Now, about 25 years ago, Trinity Lutheran Church was on the forefront of technology. Trailblazers we were. We decided to begin taping our worship services on cassette tapes. Do you remember those? Anybody remember cassette? Yeah. Soon we moved on to CDs. And then when CD rates were low, Laura Canby wanted to put our, that was a joke kind of, wanted to put our sermons online. And I think my response, being the visionary that I am, I said something like, you want to waste your time? Go ahead. But no one's going to listen online. Now we have more people listening online and podcasts than we do showing up on Sunday mornings. Yes, everything is changing at a rapid pace. Just this past week, I was doing business at a store in Freeland, and the woman helping me said, you don't know me, I've not been to your church, but I listen each week on Facebook, and your sermons have made a difference in my life. The world is changing, dramatically changing. The church is in need of reformation, and if we do not change, we will become irrelevant. The generations who are following us will not come to church just because their parents or grandparents did. Church is not a part of their DNA. In fact, joining is not a part of their lives so much. They are not joining the Kiwanis Club or the Rotary Club. They are not joining the Eagles Club or local churches. The church is always in need of reformation. Why? The third reason. Because church people tend to forget the message of Jesus. They forget what it means to follow the carpenter's son from Galilee. Church people, religious people, lose sight of their place and their calling, and they need to be reformed. The Jewish people, you may remember in the book of Genesis, were called, blessed to be a blessing. They were called by God, blessed to be a blessing to all the nations of the world. How did that play out in their history, in their faith? They decided that God loved them most of all. And the best thing that they could do would be to stay away from the Gentiles. Gentiles, as in the nations, the entire world outside of Judaism, the children of God of every race and tongue. Yes, the church is in need of reformation always because of church people. In Luther's day, the church was a superpower, and power tends to corrupt. Church leaders became intoxicated with power and the trappings of power, and they would go to any length to secure that power going forward. In Luther's day, the church held the common people captive. The church leaders used fear and superstition to control the people. Indulgences were sold. Hell was threatened. And purgatory, this 10,000-year fairy line waiting to get into heaven, was preached with vigor. The religious leaders kept the Bible out of reach, away from the common people. They kept Jesus out of reach. Instead of sharing the good news, news of comfort and hope, news of new beginnings and abundant life, news that would set people free, they chose to share only threat and to motivate with fear and to enslave people with lies. The church is in constant need of reformation, and we too need reformation. Our reformation will only take place when we properly understand our place in creation, our place in the family, our place in God's plan, a plan that was meant to be a blessing to all. And so the sermon title this morning is Finding Our Place in the Family, Following Jesus. Now the struggle to find our place in the family is nothing new. Adam and Eve ate apples because they did not like their place in the family. They would have rather been God themselves than to be mere humans. Being a child of God was not enough for them, though they wanted more. They wanted a better place at the table. And their sons, Cain and Abel, struggled to find their place in the family. And before it was over, Cain had murdered his brother. The human story is recorded in the book of Genesis, goes on, and it doesn't get much better. It was one dysfunctional family after another, one betrayal after another. And then along came the Ten Commandments, meant to order society, meant to promote freedom and safety for all. But those 10 turned into 612. And the religious leaders used those 612 commandments to control the common people, to hold them down, to extract a few shekels from them. However, the good news is by the time the disciples came along, they got it, right? No. They knew their place in the family, right? Wrong. So we come to our text this morning from the Gospel of Mark, the 10th chapter. I'd invite you to listen in. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." Jesus nodded his head and said, "What is it that you want me to do for you?" They said, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." Jesus replied, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." With this, the 10 other disciples began to be very angry with James and John. We're going to stop there for a moment. We'll come back. Knowing your place in the family is important. We live in a world that values position, power, achievement, money in the bank, and letters behind your name, status, cars, vacations, and club affiliations. In this respect, the world has not changed a lot in 2,000 years. James and John, the sons of thunder, they had been in on the ground floor of the Jesus movement. They were number 3 and number 4 on the seniority level in the company. They had sacrificed 3 years of their lives. They had left the old man and the fishing business behind at the Sea of Galilee. Now, I got to tell you, the number 3 and 4 employees at Microsoft, at Amazon, at Costco, they're doing quite well. Certainly, James and John should be paid back for their loyalty. So they said, let us be your right-hand man, your left-hand man. Lord, lift us up. Give us the status that we deserve. I got to remember, in a very short time, Jesus would be on a cross. The disciples would be hiding. And Jesus would have a right-hand man and a left-hand man. They would be thieves dying for their crimes. It's important to know your place in the family. The church is in constant need of reformation because church people tend to forget their place. So the disciples, they start choosing up sides. It was like a church fight. Ever heard of one of those? James and John, they were thinking of trying another denomination. After all, their rabbi had refused to honor their request. The rest of the disciples were mad at James and John, and they wondered what their status might be in this movement as it moved forward. Okay, it was time for a come to Jesus moment. It was time to set the record straight. The Christian movement was not going to be a movement of top-down power. So Jesus, the great teacher, called them in. He said, quit bickering for just a moment. Get your egos in check and come over here. I have to tell you right now how it's going to be. And so here it is. This is the speech of Jesus of Nazareth, the one that we follow. Jesus said, you know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. They nodded. Yes, can't argue with that, Jesus. Might makes right. Money is power. Leaders demand obedience. Rich people have slaves. It's good that we're on the top of that pyramid. But Jesus continued. He said, it will not be so among you. But whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life. This was reformation in action. This was turning the world upside down. This was radical. It was impractical. It was nonsensical. It was counterintuitive. And it would never, ever play on Main Street. Who in their right mind would want to volunteer for a movement where the goal was to be a servant? Who in their right mind would want to join a religion where the good, righteous, generous, self-righteous people would have no more status than known sinners? Now hear that speech of Jesus again. Then I'm going to ask you to consider, do you really want to follow him? You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their leaders lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them, but it is not so among you. Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to serve, not to be served, but to serve and to give his life. How's that playing on Main Street? Do you want to follow Jesus? Do you want to be a part of this reformation? Finding our place in the family and then following Jesus? What is our place? Our place is a place of service. Blessed to be a blessing. We are to be a blessing to the world. You know, at that Last Supper, in his final teaching moments of his life, Jesus modeled the Christian life for us. What did he do? He washed feet. He washed feet. He took a basin of water and a towel. He got down on his knees and he gently washed the dirt and the dust and the stink away from their feet. What did he do at that Last Supper? He served bread and wine to those who wanted to sit at his right and his left in his glory, to those who would soon leave him alone to face the cross, to the one who would betray him with a kiss. This is our Lord. This is our role model. This is the hierarchy of the church. Our leaders are to be servants. The staff that you have called at Trinity are called to be leaders by being servants. Your church council has been set aside to lead by serving. What is our place in the family? What is our position? What is our title? We are servants. Now, let me tell you a little bit about servants. Servants work for the master. They own nothing. Everything they have comes from the master. They set the table, they prepare a meal, they turn on the heat, they get ready to greet the guests that the master invites to the feast. This is a model for us. The church is at its best when it claims its rightful place in God's master plan. Christians are at their best when they live with gracious humility and thankfulness. And what is the meal? It is one sinner telling another sinner where to get bread. No one deserves it, and yet everyone is served. What is the meal? It's a parade of thirsty beggars getting a drink on the house. All are welcome to belly up to the bar. And what is baptism? It's a new beginning. Sins are washed clean. God, who formed us in the darkness of our mother's womb, now touches us with the water of new life, promising us and reminding us daily that we're loved, we're forgiven, we're never alone. It is time for a reformation in the church and in our lives. No more judging. No more excluding. No more wagging tongues of the religious or pointing fingers. No more self-righteousness. No more hate. We are all the same, a vapor, a mist, a bag of bones, and a bucket of water, moving through this life at an alarming rate. We are the children of God, everyone welcome, everyone equal. Black or white makes no difference. Divorced or married, gay or straight, ex-cons or ex-husbands, rich or poor, noisy children or disabled old folks. The master makes the guest list. We just work here. Whoever wishes to be great must be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first must be slave of all. And so I have the question for you. Do you want to follow Jesus? Do you want to pick up a towel and fall on your knees and wash feet and touch lepers and give aid to the oppressed and feed the hungry and give shelter to the poor? Do you really want to follow one who went to a cross? These questions are not intellectual. They're sincere, and they're questions of the heart. Now, we're going to give you a chance in just a few moments to answer those questions, perhaps in one way. In a few moments, I'm going to ask members of our church council and some other leaders to come forward to help serve. They will stand on each side of the baptismal font, there by the waters. They're going to wait for you, and you will be invited to come forward just as you would in Holy Communion if you decide to come. Our ushers will help you to come forward just like in Holy Communion. You'll be invited to come forward and touch those waters, to feel that water on your forehead, to renew your own baptismal promises. And then I want you to open your hands. I want you to open your hands to receive, but you're not going to be receiving bread and wine. What are you going to be receiving? A towel. Our leaders will place a towel over your hands, and they'll say a short prayer for you. The towel is then yours to take home. Put it on your bed, to grace your dining room table. Put it on your refrigerator. A visual reminder of this day, and a visual reminder of our place in the family. We're called to be servants. Do you want to follow Jesus? That's the question. Now, Carl's going to lead us in the hymn of the day. You're going to remain seated. And then Carl's going to continue to sing for us. And the ushers are going to come visit your row. And if you'd like to come forward, just like communion, come right down that center aisle. Touch those waters, and then open your hands to receive. Please come.
Lord, whose love in humble service bore the weight of human need, who upon the cross forsaken worked your mercy's perfect deed. We, your servants, bring the worship, not of voice alone, but heart, consecrating to your purpose every gift which you impart.